is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
Good morning and welcome to Guardian Radio AM. Today is Thursday, August 1st, and it's a little after 11 o'clock in the morning. Once again, this is C.A. Nuri, and I shall be your host for today. Today is Emancipation Day. Emancipation Day, that means over, how long, 1834? I need to do some math there, 100 odd years ago. Almost 200 years now. On August 1st, 1934, throughout the English diaspora, what they owned, the colonies, that the declaration was, a proclamation of independence was given for people of color to be free, right? Then 4 years later, because they only gave it immediately to those for children below the age of six. And everyone else, seven and over, had to do an apprenticeship, 4 years of working free, right? To say, to be civilized. That's what's the reason. Say, we need to teach you how to survive and how to survive post-emancipation. So in 1838, we had the masses throughout the Caribbean, of course, and wherever there was slavery in the English Commonwealth, or English, it wasn't a Commonwealth yet, right? The English territories, those people were Africans, enslaved persons. They had different type of enslaved people too, actually. They had Native Americans who they had bound in slavery, especially when they redubbed them, said you weren't no longer Native American or indigenous, you are now African, and they kept you in slavery. They also had some Indians. When I say Indians, I talk about
East Indians.
East Indians.
They had indentured servitude.
Yeah, and that came afterwards, right? But all of that I want to talk about today. But also I want to join into that, join also onto emancipation, independence. Right, the price of independence. And today's conversation is going to be about the price of emancipation, our duty of care to the ancestors. What should we be doing? Is being free a journey or is it a destination? Have we reached the promised land, like how Martin Luther King, his speech was about, or that he could see the promised land, but he wasn't able to go. Have we reached the promised land as African descendants? And by extension, as Bahamians, right? Because the system of slavery was a burden for all people. It's a burden for that person who constitutes as white. It's a burden for those persons who are constituted as black and in between, right? And that shackle that we shed off freed us of that burden. But we also have a responsibility now to, in terms of the destination we're going, how it is to be free, what it is to be free in this new modern world. And when since July 10th, we've been having a series of discussions with Bahamians who call in, saying, who suggested that we are not free, we are not independent, that we are dependent on people, right? And I put forward that independence, emancipation, freedom is a journey. It's a building block type concept, where you continue to test the system continue to fight for freedoms, fight against injustices, fight for equality. And as you move forward, you come free as a state of mind. But I want to have that discussion with Aaron today. There are many people who say we're still in bondage, that we have that mental slavery, that Bahamians do not appreciate what it is to be free. And there are some people who say, man, we just complain too much, that we have accomplished a lot of things. We have moved from a point A to deep down this alphabet.
When you say a point A to like deep down in the alphabet, right? Do you mean like how we've had electricity established on most of the islands by 1992, and now we're talking about introducing prepaid electricity meters for people who cannot afford to pay the bills, bills that are a consequence of mismanagement and dereliction of duty? Is that what you mean by making progress and moving from A to deep down in the alphabet?
And I see your critique, and it's a sly critique. And there are persons who will say moving to prepaid electricity is freedom. It gives you the freedom of not having that burden of having not being able to pay the bill at the end of the month, that you are now free to control your bill.
When you're free to control when the electricity is on and off, even though in 2024 we understand that access to electricity is now considered a human right, and that you cannot participate in a modern world without 24/7 consistent electrical supply, and that many people in this country with an astronomical level of non-communicable diseases that rely on medications that require refrigeration, that in 2024 that people may derive more freedom for determining when they can and when they will and will not turn off their electricity, as opposed to acknowledging it's when they can and cannot afford to have electricity.
And access to energy is the operative word. And definitely in the Bahamas, we do have access to energy and various means of energy that we do have access to. So definitely, even by your definition, we have reached the point where we can consider ourselves free as we journey towards freedom.
I'll tell you what I do appreciate greatly is the space to engage in rigorous and critical critique of state agencies and state actors without fear of imminent harm. Because in some countries around the world, as we speak, advocates, actors, social commentators do not have the freedoms that we enjoy, or the freedom that we enjoy in the Bahamas in terms of accessing the airwaves and freedom of expression.
Definitely. And this is something that we should herald, and this is something that we should speak about instead of having that burden of that critique, that heavy-handedness of, oh, we haven't accomplished anything. When in truth, we have accomplished many, and we are far better off than most, and that we all have a duty of care to continue to push the wheel forward. And it's when we have not accepted our role in this journey of pushing forward, that means that you're not free. You are not free because you have accepted. You know, when Kanye West say freedom's a choice, the idea that you are not participating in democracy, not participating in the efforts of enlightenment, means that you have chosen to be in bondage. And that's the conversation today, that choice.
All right. I like to say sovereignty or... Yeah, let's call it sovereignty or freedom, is rooted in understanding that you must create the things that you say that you value, and you must value the things that you can create. Mm.
And then that's where we do an interrogation of the role of government and whether our government is facilitating us space to move, right? We have a constitutional democracy. We vote for our leaders. We vote out those who we do not like. We believe it's better. Mm-hmm. We are able to participate in the decisions, decision making that we have, mm-hmm. right? These are vestiges of freedom, vestiges of independence. That, like you hinted earlier, that many countries, many people around the world do not have.
Right, they just right? do not enjoy it
at all. Right, their fate in life is fixed. They born poor and will more likely die poor. Whereas in the Bahamas, you can born unprivileged, and end up being the richest Bahamian there is. In fact, who that is? Frankie Wilson mentioned that story.
He's talking about Lil Mortimer? Or was he talking about himself?
He was talking about himself. He said, humble beginnings, and now he's a social elite through hard work, right? All the number men in the Bahamas can say that they came from humble backgrounds. All of the politicians can say they came from humble backgrounds.
Yeah, because all of the politicians are 70-plus years old, and they came from a time when everybody was humble and poor. Everybody was in the same economic state. Like Sir Randall Fox said, before majority rule, everybody's first name was boy and everybody's last name was nigger. So like this pretense, right? Like it is great rhetoric. It's great rhetoric when you hear, like, I'll remember all the time hearing Perry Christie tell the story, right? Like I'm a taxi driver and a poor one. You hear Reverend Simeon Hall, which I think is a wonderful snapshot in his life, right? And he say, man, I was a young boy doing foolishness. They drop out of school and they go on to the night, you know, the nuns them tell me, boy, come, let's go catch yourself. Little boy from Choke Neck Alley. And in that space with the nun, he realized that he could be more than he was told that he was. And he struck out from there, right? Those are great stories. But if they are authentic, and the authenticity isn't necessarily in the beginning, right? Like was Frankie Wilson really poor? Like outside toilet, like my neighbors had outside toilet, but I had to go and use a hole in the ground poor? Or
Frankie Wilson grew up through Ross Corner, which is a corner away from where I grew up, right? Mm-hmm. And for the era, he said he was born and lived there through his life. He had to be in poor because there's no rich people through that. We still have the vestiges of poverty through Taylor Street, Comfort Street, Ross Corner, where he originated from. Outside toilets are still there in that community. So if he grew up in that community, he's definitely poor.
So pause. That's what I was going to continue with authenticity, right? You could tell me a small lie in the beginning. Like maybe your mother was the head nurse. You know, maybe she came from Royal College of London Nursing School. It's the authenticity of the living of the story. So when you tell me he came from Ross Corner and the place still looked like under Tobacco Dove Arm.
But that's a social issue for the people who live through Ross Corner too. And not necessarily, they're somewhat even there to say that there's a new Bohemian that lives through Ross Corner. Not necessarily those people from that era.
Right,
they've moved out.
I would counter that by indicating absolutely. But the issue sits with those who created the vacuum. The issue sits with those who left and left nothing to fill the space. The world abhors a vacuum. Whenever a vacuum exists, it will be filled with something. Is it a cultural imperialism that caused us to attach the policy of home ownership driving national pride? We attach that to an American suburban construct. And so those who could were encouraged to move out of the inner city and build homes. We also have a cultural construct that lied to people and tell them two women can't live in the same house and man need to turn his own lock. Those people left and left a vacuum. So I would say that the, not blame, but a part of the liability or complicity also lies with those who never came back in a true and substantive way. It's not fair to say, oh, it's a different kind of Bahamian living there, or it's different people. You left a vacuum. What did you expect to fill it? And so can you then use that trope, that beautiful story that has now become political rhetoric and trope about I come from poor people and I didn't know what toilet paper was until I gone to school. Does it maintain its authenticity if you never went back, if you forgot about that? Why you want me to use that to drive my life and you've done everything you can to forget about that existence, to disconnect yourself from that existence to the point where you, even as a policymaker, can't see the needs of those people that were living the same life that you were living, but 70 years later.
And again, I hear your critique. I hear your critique, even though I rejected to say that you're being too harsh with your or heavy-handed with your criticism.
I tell you what, I appreciate that it is a very strong critique, but there are those of us who could afford it, and that's who it's for.
And I would even dare to say that those with wealth are the ones who now are subsidizing the inner city.
I love that point that you raise. I see that. I acknowledge it. I also put on the table that it's not sufficient because it's those people that are perpetuating a patronage model. It is time for us to move from at the political level, from a culture of charity and begging for support to a culture of structural reform and creating policies that actually capture the needs of the constituents they serve.
You mentioned culture versus policies, right? And we know there's a famous saying that law dictates the culture, right? But the lawmakers are the general populace. The general populace needs to lobby what things that they see fit for them. And our general populace tends to be lacking. They do not have the vision on where they should see themselves. They don't think that they're worthy of more. So they don't encourage politicians to say, well, I will now go back into the community because they are demanding more. So if they do demand more, politicians do what politicians do.
Well, when you said that law dictates culture, I think culture drives enforcement, right? Law dictates culture, but culture drives enforcement. To the point you were making just now, I don't think they are among us. When they become elected, they throw off the coat of ordinary citizen, and they smile as they're welcomed into the arms of the political class. They see themselves as different. They change their cell phones when they get elected. They leave the pre-election phone at home or in the car in the back trunk. They become different people. And I think it is in that space where they imagine themselves to be separate from the ordinary people that the problem arises. Now, I will be fair and say, the political class is driven by political culture. Political culture is overwhelming. And I imagine that the vast majority of politicians that we've seen over the last 30 years have been overwhelmed entirely by the political culture.
I would challenge that and say that our politicians are a reflection of us. They reflect who we see ourselves. You're saying they have changed their phone numbers? We would have changed our phone numbers the same way. So what you see is what we would have done. And these politicians just reflect that. So until we have reached a point where we say, this is where we want our country, this is the freedom that we want, our politicians won't respond. We are now suggesting to our politicians that is what you're doing, we are comfortable with, mm-hmm. right? The success that you want. We want our politicians to be rich. We want our politicians to have the best cars. And this is why when our politicians get these trappings, we defend them because this is what we expect. Someone asked me recently, why haven't any politicians been convicted for corruption over the decades? We may have only had one being convicted. And my response to that is, we don't want to see our honorable men locked up in Fox Hill. We'll do anything to stop that. So you hearing the loud minority who saying, oh, yes, you should go to jail. But when the rubber is hit the road, you'll see that we will interrupt that process. We will say, no, you're being too harsh on our honorable men. So the problems that you're seeing is not a political one where there's politicals controlling the problem. The problem is us. We are comfortable with the system we have, right? And this where... Okay. Culture will push back to the law and say, I understand that you're supposed to change it by the law, but there's no need to change the law if we're happy.
I want to stick a pin. I think everything has been consumed and overwhelmed by the political culture. I think that people understand the Bahamas, that money dictates power and power controls everything. And so people in desperation for survival have decided that, like I said in the earlier segment, Aaron, you want me to stand straight with you? The whole world going left. Mm-hmm. The whole world going left, right? What sense it make me standing here with you standing up straight?
Let me give you an example.
And then let's go to text line.
In the Bahamas, we have an island that, if it's not the fifth largest Caribbean island, it's the seventh largest Caribbean island. Right?
Andres.
Which means I can hold millions of people. After Cuba, Puerto Rico, Jamaica, Trinidad, Hispaniola, and then comes Andres, right? Andres is ripe for development, right? It can hold, let me finish this. It can hold the entire population of the Bahamas.
Pun intended?
Ripe for development?
Yeah, pun intended, because you know I got to challenge you on that.
My point, what I'm trying to make is, the people of Andres don't want no development. You ask them, do you want a hotel or do you want investors to come and change, modernize,
okay,
modernize
now
Andres
to be
a competitive city?
Now I have to stick
and
a pin.
And they will say, no, I don't want Andres to be a competitive city.
Now I have to stick a pin, because and what's not being said is, you ain't going to get no proper road if you ain't got no hotel. See, that's what's not being said. Androsians deserve a proper road, whether tourists come there or not. Androsians deserve proper hospitals, whether tourists come in or not. They deserve proper electricity, proper phone systems, whether tourists or foreign direct investors are coming or not.
And as you
this
know,
is the obligation of the state.
In United States, rural areas, I see your telephone caller, in the United States, rural areas do not look like the city. They don't have the paved roads like
when
how the city.
When last you been to Andres?
What do you mean when last have been?
But you know what under Tobacco Dove look like, right?
My point is, Andres can get development overnight if the people there will say, yes, we would welcome development.
First of all,
they don't want the development.
First of all, no.
And the culture is dictating to the law.
They don't want the type of development that's being dictated to them.
So they have to wait.
But so we don't row. Let's go to the phone line and then the text. Ready to row?
They just have to wait.
Wait for what?
Wait for one of their own to
invest. Wait for the expenditure report for the 50th Independence Celebration.
That's for Nassau people. Let's go to the caller there. Go ahead, caller. Can you hear me?
Yes, good morning, Mr. Nguyen. Good morning, Ms. Green.
Morning, sir.
I'm doing well this morning. Yes, Ms. Green, I mean, you got to watch Mr. Nguyen. I believe Mr. Nguyen practicing to be a politician or a pastor, one of the two, because, I mean, the kind of narrative he's kicking this morning, I mean, I don't know where he's coming from. Right? I mean, I don't know who he's trying to convince with that stuff. But when he was saying just now that we want our politicians to be rich and thing, I mean, Mr. Nguyen, I disagree with that.
So you want your politicians to be poor?
This is how I see it, Mr. Nguyen. I see it that an individual who has the ideal mindset to lead and for service, he's not concerned about being wealthy.
No, they come in wealthy. They ain't concerned with it. They're wealthy already.
I think that's the problem, Mr. Nguyen, in a way. I mean, I'm not trying to say an individual who is wealthy cannot be have integrity and stuff, but I'm just trying to say that we're looking at it from the wrong perspective. We should be looking at it from a perspective of what the individual has to offer.
You mean who?
Like a politician or a pastor, whoever. But I mean, especially a politician. But I was thinking just to myself how we celebrate, like, the achievement of the individual as opposed to, like, what they're doing and the value of what they bring to the job.
You know, we celebrate the ends versus the means.
I didn't hear you.
We celebrate the ends versus interrogating the means.
Yeah, like if Mr. Nguyen was to be elected a member of parliament, all of a sudden everyone's, ooh, happy, like, Nguyen, you know what I mean? Like, excited for Nguyen and Nguyen this. But then, like it's more a celebration of Mr. Nguyen achieving an office other than, and that's it.
Well, let me tell you what it is. Hold on, let me tell you what it is. It isn't, it's a little more nuanced than presented. It isn't that we just want to see these boy them get rich because politicians should be rich. I celebrate when a boy hit a lick because maybe I could hit a lick too. If a politician could be rich, then I could possibly be a politician and be rich too. That's why we celebrate it.
Yes, yeah, but well, yeah, I understand. I mean, like just ride the coattail thing type thing.
Well, no, it's in the potential. It's well, like, I mean, it's like with numbers, right?
You as an individual could achieve the same things. What you're saying?
Right, like when you play numbers, you lost for the last month. When your boy hit, you happy and you celebrating that because that it reminds you of the possibility that
give you
could
hope.
Hit
give
two.
Hope. Give you some hope.
Right, give you some hope.
Yes,
and so if
yes,
the politician could be rich, then possibly in the future, I could be a politician and I could be rich too.
Yes, ma'am, but what I'm saying, I think y'all may be familiar with a man by the name of Thomas Sankara from Burkina Faso.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the measures that he took when he achieved leadership, right? He downscaled everything.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? He took away the luxury cars from the leaders, et cetera, and gave them little regular cars. I mean, like, that's the kind of attitude
mm-hmm.
that I want a leader to have. Like, I don't want a leader to have a mindset who is craving, like, because when you have a certain mindset, like, wealth is, like, nothing. What is more important to you is harmony and everything running the way it's supposed to run, you know, that kind of way. Like, that's more your concern. And as long as you have the necessities in life, like you understand a concept like material desire and luxuries, like to have that kind of mindset, like, that's all from a leader. I mean, in my personal opinion, you understand? And that's why...
You want brave be like the president of Bolivia, who tell them, don't give me no car, don't give me nothing, I can drive this old Volkswagen.
His wife was a politician as well,
so it wasn't that he would have been living in abject poverty as the leader of the country, but he felt that he and his wife would be comfortable with the salary that she made and a minimal salary from the state on his behalf.
Yeah, like if you live through McCullough Corner and you become MP, you could stay to McCullough Corner. You understand where I'm coming from?
Right.
I'm just calling the name up top.
I like the idea because a high-profile person in that area should then shift the policing culture in that area and policies. It should make the area safer for everybody.
Yeah, and then you should seek to better your environment.
Yeah, there you go.
You know what I mean? But what I wanted to say, too, on the talk, because y'all were talking about independence a little bit, too, and CA was doing a little narrative about we could do this and we could do that and stuff. I feel as if CA is intelligent enough to know that we are not really and truly independent.
Mr. Nuri is intelligent enough to know that if he baits me, well, I will bite. I may be smart, but I still a grouper at heart.
But I want you to eat him up in the studio, Mr.
Mike, yeah, eat him up in the studio. He have a wife. I know his wife. I can't be handling my co-host rough like that.
No, Mike, you deserve to eat him up when you come with that kind of thing, Ms. Graham, because, you know what I mean? You deserve to eat up that kind of narrative.
Thank you, sir. I can let you go on this, Mike. Yes, sir.
And before we go to tax, right?
Yeah, yeah.
We have the politicians that we want.
Well, like gods, we get the governments we deserve.
Yes. I wanted to say that we do not want our MP to be living in our community. If we did, we was going to vote for someone there. That has not happened in decades. And the nearest one to that is whoever that big mansion off Market Street, almost four story. Mother Pratt.
Why you want to make me talk about my good MP, man?
Mother Pratt.
My MP live in the neighborhood he grew up in.
I see the leads in that neighborhood.
Yeah, but listen. But
that's a different type of neighborhood.
What I think
that neighborhood is gated.
No, it's not gated.
Every time I pass through there.
Only 7 a.m. to 9 a.m.
on
school mornings.
Why do the curtains move when I pass through there? I can't even walk through your neighborhood, man. You wave and say, he with me. You forget. He with me.
I just
your neighborhood
saying,
is just different.
Don't not call the boy. He grow up.
In the elite neighborhood.
So I appreciate that.
Yes.
What I like is to put biases and the truths on the table.
Yeah,
we live in a slightly upper class. Now, I want you to know the people to the east of us is laugh at us, right?
Yeah, I know.
Is laugh at us.
Yeah.
But that's another example of someone that grew up in the neighborhood that they live in now and that they run in. They live in the constituency that they are the MP for.
Yes.
Adrian White.
My point is, like, love his mansion there too. My point is, we don't want our politicians to be poor. We expect to, when we go knock on our politician door, if he's living next door, that he has something
sugar.
To give us.
If you get some sugar, I need some sugar.
And I need two bags. And you can't say I have no sugar today because it's time to vote you out. Because you can't help me no more. You can't say I'm poor just like you.
Right?
You can't tell me you poor just like me.
It's slightly more complex and nuanced because we've created a patronage system. See, if the hospital made sense, right? If the hospital made sense, like the kind of sense that would compel a prime minister to have health services in the country that he manages, if the hospital made sense, then every weekend wouldn't be filled with 17 different families having medical fundraisers for people who are 25. And so you could have a medical fundraiser every week for your Grammy who is 80. I may only come and buy a soda, but I will come every week.
Let me beat you. Do we have to go to England to improve that? Because I'm not sure. Only if we're independent, we can actually improve it by itself.
I'll be honest. Let me tell you.
Or do we need to get permission from some kind of colonizer to improve our lot?
Real time. Dr. Dwayne Sands, former Minister of Health, in his capacity of chairman of the FNM party, used the term medical apartheid, right, when referencing the hospital several months ago. If the FNM come back to power, and if Dwayne Sands is the minister responsible for health, and if he does not manage from day one, like we have a medical apartheid in this country and it needs to be resolved, then yes, I'm going straight to England. I'm going to find Charles and I'm going to tell Charles' cousin on a professional note, get these brethren them out of here. Tell me what I need to do. Because at this point, the mechanisms that we have available to us through our constitution are being ignored by state actors. I think this is an important
and
point.
And our state actors tend to change every 5
and they,
years.
And so,
the issue is cultural.
How many 5 years between 2011 and 2024?
There's at least two.
Okay, then. When was the last time that public disclosures were gazetted outside of the electoral disclosures?
So see,
2011.
My point of that is it's still us.
That's nothing
to do with the politicals at all. We have not yet to demand it.
All right, so pause. I feel you. So we take it through the courts, right? How much money is required to go to the Supreme Court? Is it like a minimum of $50,000? Let's go call Toby Smith and find out how much money was required.
We have yet to even try.
I sell in cup and baggie for my medical costs right now. I can't afford to fund. You want me? You tell me BPL need $500 million and what I could put in. You come to my house talking about what you could put in the kitty, Miss Green. I get to have a fundraiser for my medical care because if you had an MRI machine, you didn't install it properly, and now you can't rely on the warranty to repair it. Or if you had a dialysis machine, you're letting sewer water drip on it and contaminate it. We've reached the point where those with the money have aligned with the political class versus the ordinary people. And the truth is, we cannot sell enough cup and baggie to raise $500 million.
So let's.
And they won't let you deal drugs no more. That's the only way you could make that type of money.
Let's go to the text, but let's talk this. Are we prepared to frustrate the system? When I say frustrate the system, be as independent as Cuba. To say, to hell with the world.
Well, that's what.
Let me finish this. To hell with the world. We're coming off grid. We are doing all those things where we said we wouldn't want to do. We are going to be anti-capitalist and share this wealth. There's going to be no millionaires here, right? All of your work and efforts are going towards for the benefit of the state. Are Bahamians prepared to do that? And if Bahamians are not prepared to do this, then we the lot we have is ours.
All right. Bahamians are prepared to do that. They are doing it in silos right now. Every time somebody run a red light or a stop sign, I don't take it personally, you know.
That's lawlessness.
Listen to what I'm saying. I don't take that personally. That is a response to the state. That's somebody, like you're trying to fight your way out of a brown paper bag. You mad at the state. You're frustrated with the dereliction of duty of the state. But you're taking it out on yourself and other people, right? Because there are no formal or organized channels of protest. In Cuba.
There'd be a protest? A protest in Cuba?
Well, let's go back to the end of, was it Batista's reign? And when
revolution.
When the revolution, that was organized.
That's a revolution.
People had an organized system to divert their protests to, right? And the revolutionaries benefited from that, their energy, because they organize the people in a way that made the energy valuable and useful. Because we are not organized, because the political culture has convinced us that we're stronger as individuals, we out here all kind of silent protests. I mean, even state actors refuse to follow the proper procedure because of their frustration with the political culture and class.
That's a culture of lawlessness you are trying to gloss over as protest.
No, it is what becomes of organized protests. Of unorganized protests. Unorganized protests leads to lawlessness. If you see that the people are frustrated, you understand what they're frustrated about. But not only do you not provide them solutions, but you pay them lip service constantly. They begin to protest. Unorganized or disorganized protest becomes lawlessness.
We talk about our responsibility for freedom, our responsibility for independence, right? Mm-hmm. And whether we are living up to our responsibility.
So when we come back from the break, we'll run through these texts. Texts, I haven't forgotten you. These are some excellent texts here. You're on Guardian Radio AM with C.A. Newry. We'll be right back.
When and what are children waving in the water?
Bahamas, Sazbear wants you to join us as we celebrate our amazing Bahamian athletes as they head to Paris for the 2024 Olympic Games. As a truly Bahamian company, we're cheering loud and proud for our incredible team. Join us this summer as we raise a toast to their hard work and dedication as they proudly represent our flag, our country, our peer, our athletes. Here's to bringing home the gold. Good luck, Team Bahamas. Sazbear, truly Bahamian, drink responsibly.
Attention, all fall 2024 applicants to University of the Bahamas. The new academic year is fast approaching and we're thrilled to welcome you to UB. But first, we need your help. If you've started your online application, now is the time to submit all outstanding supporting documents. Make sure to send in your transcripts and copies of relevant passport pages urgently. To secure your acceptance to UB, your application must be fully processed. And remember to keep checking your emails for important updates and reminders. Orientation and advisement for new students kicks off on Wednesday, August 7th, and classes begin Monday, August 19th. This message is brought to you by the Office of Recruitment and Admissions at University of the Bahamas.
The Grand Bahama News is available and you can buy your local paper at Freeport convenience stores, Western Bakery, DeGregory's Fine Foods, and Bellevue Gifts. Now is the time to reach your Grand Bahama market with affordable packages, including print and digital. Call GB News Sales Representative Kavondre at 822-6717 or message him on WhatsApp for ad rates. Classified ads are now available every Tuesday as well. Keep up with everything Grand Bahamian every Tuesday in the Nassau Guardian.
Attention, all fall 2024 applicants to University of the Bahamas. The new academic year is fast approaching and we're thrilled to welcome you to UB. But first, we need your help. If you've started your online application, now is the time to submit all outstanding supporting documents. Make sure to send in your transcripts and copies of relevant passport pages urgently. To secure your acceptance to UB, your application must be fully processed. And remember to keep checking your emails for important updates and reminders. Orientation and advisement for new students kicks off on Wednesday, August 7th, and classes begin Monday, August 19th. This message is brought to you by the Office of Recruitment and Admissions at University of the Bahamas.
Love the show? Want to give your support? Become a sponsor today. Call 302-2300 for our rates and packages. That's 302-2300. Become a sponsor on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
See that band all dressed in white.
God's a-gonna trouble the water.
The leader looks like the Israelite.
God's minds are gonna trouble the water.
Ooh,
wait in the water.
Oh,
wait in the water, children.
And welcome back to Guardian Radio AM. Of course, this is C.A. Nuri. And we are having a discussion about Emancipation Day. We have a discussion about independence. But emancipation means a lot to me. And I believe that I have a duty of care to my people in terms of moving us forward, moving us towards this promised land. I have a duty of care to say, I'm going to put my shoulder to the wheel and work, right? But the idea is, what am I working towards? What am I prepared to sacrifice? Am I prepared to tear up everything and make this island, this country into Badland, into a Mad Max era? Or am I willing to create a new system of governance of where I see the Bahamas, where I'm prepared to sacrifice, where I'm prepared to do, where I'm prepared to contribute? Or are we just going to complain?
A new system of personal, communal, and national governance, right? Are we going to commit to that? That's the start at home. We govern ourselves first.
We govern ourselves first.
The most important element. But Mr. Nuri, when you play that music, Wade in the Water, right? Why you play that song? It's so sweet. You know what popping in my mind? I call in all Hannah Hasties and Tynes. If y'all don't come out to this meet and greet tonight so we could ask. See,
I got some new history, by the way.
Oh, awesome. Because yeah. I wanted people to come out so we could ask Barbara Pierre about the story that was recounted in the Face-to-Face article 2019. About the family, the Hannah family,
okay.
Arthur D. Hannah's family and upbringing. The story when two sisters went out in the boat and the boat took on water and A.D. Hannah had to swim out into the harbor and rescue them and bring them back to shore, right? When you talked about what am I putting my shoulder to the wheel for, what am I fighting for, what am I building towards, right? You're building towards a legacy, right? And that's why I tried to bring this family reunion conversation to a broader space so other people could understand that you're working for things that you could enjoy in this lifetime, but more importantly, for things to be enjoyed by your descendants for the future, right? And I think that the Hannah family, A.D. Hannah's small pocket of family and the grander, larger HHT family, and then by extension, the even larger Acklands, Long Key and Crooked Island families show us a story of legacy. And we could see in real time what it was the ancestors put their shoulders to the wheel for.
Your events start today?
Yeah.
Where's that? Where's
it's going to be at Sharon Stewart's residence, and it starts at 7 p.m.
There's a meet and greet.
6 p.m. Starts at 6 p.m. It's meet and greet, the first night of the reunion, for family members to come out. You ain't seen a family member in a long time.
And when you say family members, who you mean again?
Hannah, if you are a Hannah Hasty Tynes descendant, you don't have to carry the last name, but if you are a Dusty Tynes family, come out. We're going to have history booklets to peruse through that could be purchased. You can order to purchase one, whether print or jump drive. We're going to have family trees. We're going to have the Hannah family tree, the Andrus Hannahs and the Grand Bahama Hannahs family trees, the Hasty family tree, and the Tynes family tree as well.
And that's today, Thursday?
Right.
What's happening on Friday?
Friday morning is the breakfast meeting, the general meeting.
What do you mean by breakfast meeting?
We're going to be breakfast. We're going to meet and we're going to talk about association business, like who want to host the reunion, the next reunion, right? Things we want to do maybe at the next reunion, things we think are important for the association to tend to over the next 2 years or for, you know, until the end of our term as the executive team, the way forward, and there'll be breakfast.
That's Friday. So what happened on Saturday?
So Friday night's going to be the soiree party.
It's a Friday morning and a Friday night?
Right.
Okay.
So Friday morning we could be at Claude Hannah's residence. We say thank you to both Sharon Stewart and Claude Hannah, who have year over year shown themselves to be stakeholders and guardians of the Hannah Hasty Tynes family.
And Friday night is what?
The soiree family dinner at Sapodilla. Saturday is the beach picnic. We're going to be in Coral Harbor. Check the WhatsApp group for the directions and the address to the beach picnic location. We're going to have beach and pool and picnic.
So people can still participate, call and join in?
Right, people can still participate. We're not turning anyone away. Even if you come to the event hoping to pay, just we want you to understand that resources may be limited because we are now like a month past the initial deadline date.
But still come.
You may not be able to get all the trinkets, but trinkets are not as important as meeting your family.
And Sunday's what happened on Sunday.
Sunday we have a church service, and we are going to be at, I'm pulling up my phone, I'm just trying to get the name of the church, but we're definitely going to be, the church is located at number one, Dignity Gardens. That's number one, Dignity Gardens, off of Carmichael Road. I'm going to get the name of the church. I is apologizing, Mr. Newry, that I don't have it right off hand.
No problem. In the meantime.
But most importantly, I think the meet and greet, the breakfast meeting, you have to come out. Listen, you got to come out and bring your children so they could meet their cousins and they could meet their family, right? This is also important for, you got a business, you want your family to know you got a business. That's your first source of customers, is your family network, right? You may have people who are interested in doing the same thing. You may find business partners. But most importantly, you got to come and, young people, you got to come and hear the stories straight out the elders' mouths.
Okay, that's a Hannah Hasty you Times right. reunion. Happening from Thursday to Sunday.
Right.
Show the phone number, then we go back to my desk.
So the phone number to call 424-7228. That's 424-7228 or 455-7242. That's 455-7242. Okay. So let's get to the text line.
Let's go.
Text line says, do the ethics of wealth matter? If you crook someone or engage in illegal activity and gain tremendous wealth, have you done well? From an article on Forbes, quote, Aristotle was the first to state that inequality triggers a revolution. And that was certainly the case during the French Revolution, when onerous taxes on the lower and middle classes enhanced the lives of the wealthiest aristocrats. The American Revolution was also about unfairness. Remember the rallying cry, no taxation without representation? That was in response to Americans being taxed for the gain of British. I also read another research paper on this. I wish I'd kept the reference. The hypothesis in that other paper was that the wealthy have an obligation and indeed a self-preserving interest to reduce the wealth gap. In this country, we're clearly going in the opposite direction. The wealthy seek more and more to hide themselves behind gates, enjoy the trappings of wealth, and ignore the suffering of the poor because, quote unquote, it's their fault. It may well be, but the point of the research was, is it better to hold all the wealth and face an uprising from starving people, or is it better to be a little less wealthy and have a society of peace? The troubling thing for me is I see this wealth separation in the PM with all the public money being spent on government comforts. Mm. End of text. Another text. Good day. I regret to inform you that you will be going to England and I will chip in for you to fly first class. Don't worry. Charles is my cousin. He got hooked. No, I can't say hook me up.
You can send that jet.
I had another cousin. They hooked all of them up. No, I can sort it out. I can call you. Another text, I'm starting to agree with Mr. Newry. If we wanted different leaders, we would stop voting for PLP and FNM and give either DNA or Lincoln Bain Party a chance or some other new party. The DNA wouldn't give themselves a chance. They had to do the hard work and build a foundation. They wanted power now or nothing at all. Then... Because I come in to block the game, when I lose in, I block the game. Oh, this person say, they ain't Hannah, but they will be Hannah if we play in dominoes. But it's a great political critique, because I think a lot of people say if they can't win, they can block the game.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to this caller before we go. Producer Pasha, call for me, please. Go ahead, caller. Can you hear me?
There we go. Yeah, good morning, Ms. Green. Good morning, Mr. Newry.
Morning.
Yeah, I wanted to call. I was a little busy. Ben's the Rastaman call just now. But, you know, Mr. Newry's halfway right? But a question, do we deserve the healthcare system that we have? The answer is no. But because most of us are ignorant about the healthcare system, I called years ago and spoken about the lack of an MRI machine in the hospital to avoid invasive biopsies, et cetera, et cetera. You won't hear about liquid biopsies, but that is why I was always calling for a scientific ombudsman to educate the public. But a caller actually called and said, we don't need it. So as it relates to politics, the only reason why you and I know what it is to be rich, because we see in the rich and their snobbish attitude towards the poor, which is the final solution, which is to get rid of us, but they'll smile whilst they're helping us, right? The rich and the capitalists have benefited from the collective wealth of the poor. So for me, seeing you speaking collectively, but me individually, I don't want my politician to be rich, but if he is rich by, getting rich, the nefarious activity, the burden of that will still lie on the poor. And so Aaron mentioned with the French Revolution in 60,
yes, or
whatever. So it's before that. But me personally, it doesn't even matter if they live in the area, but if you show love and compassion. But what I'm saying is, remember now, the wealth disparity is always growing. So I'm not going to deify man that eat, breathes, and defecates. And that's just not in me. You see what I'm saying? I just can't do it. You know, I like some of the heroes, of course, but then I would have to humanize them. Even look at Marcus Garvey and the guy who knew infinity. He died a pauper. And we revere them today.
52?
So for me to lionize the politician means that I don't love myself. And those last three texts, those were perfectly correct because when you look at it,
And I thank you, 52. I wanted to hear the rest of it, but we got to go. We got to go. It's 1 minute before 12 o'clock. Let's wade in the water and prepare ourselves, right? Let's prepare ourselves to emancipate ourselves from mental slavery, because none but ourselves
can free our minds.
There you go.
And remember that you must do what you know you ought to do when you know you ought to do it. That's another element of freedom.
We need to put our shoulders to the wheel and stop complaining. Stop complaining and just work. This has been Guiding Radio AM with C.A. Nuri. Thank you very much, Aaron Green.
Absolutely.
Have a wonderful day.